But I've always had the mentality where, hey, I'm going to get as far as I can in life here, in my education. If I finish, good. If I wasn't able to finish, at least I knew I got to where I was able to, or until way where they allowed me to get there. Yeah, I knew, as I was moving through all these steps in my life, I always had that behind my the back of my head, thinking that DACA is temporary and it might be taken away at any given time. And my education, they cannot take away.
What is going on, everyone? I'm your host, Kevin Munoz. You're listening to the LEO podcast, where we talk about various educational topics, especially those impacting the Latin American community. In today's episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Pedro Hernandez, a fellow DACA recipient with a Master of Science in Social Work. He is currently a licensed master social worker and a third-year doctoral student at Our Lady of the Lake University, where he is doing research on immigration, DACA, and healthcare disparities in minority communities. And right now, you can help Pedro with this important research by answering questions on his survey, which you can find in the link in the show notes. In addition, Pedro is also a member of the Society for Social Work and Research, part of the OU LGBTQ Alliance and PhD Pre-Health Dreamers, as well as an active volunteer at the Food Bank of the Rio Grande Valley Incorporated. So let's get started with today's episode, which I hope you enjoy as much as I enjoyed recording it. I know to get where you're at, it's not easy, especially as a DACA recipient. So why don't you now tell us a little about yourself and like what you're doing and your project and everything.
My name is Pedro Hernandez, and I'm originally from Oaxaca, Mexico. I immigrated with my family when I was 7. So it's about 26 years ago.
Same as me. I was 7 as well.
Really? Yeah. So my whole has been here. Yeah. So at 7, parents just say, let's grab our bags and we're going.
Yeah.
You have no other choice than to just follow them, right? Like not behind. So I still remember that first trip, the only trip that we took. It's for some reason, it's like fresh in my mind and it's never going to probably disappear. So
for good reason. It's not an everyday thing.
Right. Yeah, it was a drastic change. I remember I cried. So then we got established here in South Texas, and where my dad used to live, and I've grown up here since. It's the border region with Mexico, with Reynosa. I went to high school here, community college. I earned my bachelor's in social work in 2013, my master's in social work in 2017. I got licensed in the state of Texas. Thankfully, Texas is a Republican state, but we were allowed to get licensed. DACA. And then in 2019, I decided to go back to school for my PhD in social work. And as you mentioned, it has been very, very challenging. I think the most challenging part has been funding the PhD program and paying for it. I've pulled strings. It's my last year, thankfully. Picking up jobs here and there, working PRN at the hospital to pay. I didn't have the same benefits as my other classmates, like getting loans.
Right, FAFSA and everything.
Yeah. So when I interviewed, they said, this was a rude awakening for me, because when I was interviewed for the PhD program, they said, yes, there's social work. There's a social work organization that helps you fellowship as a fellow. So I got accepted into the program. I said yes and everything. So when I was going to start applying for that, one of the requirements that you had to be a U.S. citizen. So then that was totally like
that's for the, one of the requirements for their funding that they offer for PhD,
right.
people in social work, right, that you mentioned?
Right. Yes. Yes. Oh, and kind of like heartbroken. I did cry. I'm not going to lie. And my friends helped me out through it. My classmates that I was barely meeting. And I was a little hurt because it's being a social work organization. They right. have requirements. So I'm like, that's not what social workers do. But anyways,
it's a bit ironic, right? Like,
yeah. Yes. So I did email them and I told them, I explained like my position and who I was and the fact that there was not funding for DACA recipients. That's something they should really look into and maybe change the policies later on down. I did email them.
Good for you, because some might just take it as it is and not even also ask them to maybe they should look into changing it for DACA recipients. Like,
yeah,
if maybe they haven't even thought, they probably even think about that before you asked, right? Because maybe they didn't have many DACA recipients looking towards to it, or that they knew of.
Yeah, so the amount, the DACA recipient going into PhD programs, it's a lot less than going into even masters. There's more less. So I reached out to them, I told them, and they said, we'll take your word, your email and discuss it. And but I didn't hear back from them, so I went on with my life. I picked up I went, I was like,
as one does. It's like, what can you do?
I was like, okay, explore what I'm gonna do. I said, I got accepted into this program, and out of 30 applications, it was only 9 of us who made it into it. So I said, I made it in, and there's a way that I'm gonna get through it. So
love that.
I picked up, I was already working full time. I'm also a Zumba instructor at a Gold's Gym. So that was funny. And then I became an adjunct professor teaching online classes for a master level social work program at the university. So that was a big like half of what I had to pay each semester. And then I had to, you know, make ends meet with some things, and I've been going through funding it. And now I picked up an extra job at a hospital as a PRN social worker. So weekends I'm there, but it won't be until I finish the program, and it's a lot, it's too much.
So that's where you're currently at, right? So you're doing some Zumba instructions, instructing, and picking up some shifts at the hospital. And you're saying, was it professor at the university, or
an adjunct?
Okay, cool, yes. Awesome. So you didn't wow. So you got your schedule pretty full, right?
Yeah, and then my job, I have a full time job at a dialysis clinic as a social worker.
Wow, that's amazing.
But I can't wait till when it's all. I'm gonna readjust my life again, and all
right.
My
Well, I mean, listen, before we get into like the whole PhD program, master's, and we even touched upon a little bit on the funding, which I like to explore a little bit more of as we move through the episode. But before that, I wanted to see your journey, right? I wanted the audience to know about your journey as a DACA recipient through the educational system. Did you, and to begin that, I just want to say, like, did you know that you were a DACA recipient? Did you know that you were an immigrant in this country? Like, you know, it's not unheard of where there's people that in the high school, they're applying for college, and that's like the first time that they're finding out, right? What was your experience with that?
I kind of knew ever since I was in middle school, my parents would talk about it, and they would talk about Mexico and that we couldn't go. So then I saw my friends lived a different lifestyle than I did. Right. That's when I started to observe that my life was a little bit different than theirs. And I picked up on that. So then going into high school, I already knew by like freshman year, because my parents would have those discussions. Like, what if you don't have a license? What if they stop you? And this is when I started to realize that it got more real when we were in 18, 16 that my friends started to get jobs at McDonald's, at the fast food restaurants, and I couldn't. That's when I knew I was undocumented, right? And it was hard to accept it, and I didn't know what was, well, where I was going in life, but I just kept on. My dad would always tell me, he was always telling me, estudia, estudia, porque el día de mañana a lo mejor te ayuden por tus estudios, porque estás en la escuela. So I was like, okay. Some friends would ask me, they're like, why are you going to college anyways? You're not even going to be able to work and use your education. Mm-hmm. I was like, we don't know that. And then I just kept on going through college, like, with that mentality, until my last year was when DACA came in and started to use my bachelor's degree in social work.
Right. And then you went to, you went to community college, and then you pursued to the university that you're currently at?
Yes. So in Texas, there's a Senate bill that allows undocumented students to apply for state tuition.
So it's like the Dreamers Act, like their own, like the state's own, like, yeah, Dreamers Act, right? I've heard. Yeah.
That be through my bachelor's and my parents. And then master's, they don't assist you with master's anymore. So,
I didn't know that.
They stop at the bachelor's. And then I lived at my parents' house for 1 year because my master's was advanced standing 9 months. So I was broke.
Budget.
Yeah. I was paying out of pocket until I graduated. I took five classes each semester. So the fifth one was free. So as immigrants, we don't give up. That's mm-hmm. what I learned from my. You keep on searching and exploring and never giving up and keep going.
So what made you pursue social work? Did you just did you always know that you wanted to do social work? Do you think that like your background maybe had some effect, like, influence on that?
I think what made me choose social work was my personality, that I was very easygoing with those around me. If I saw someone in the cafeteria by themselves, I would go sit with them and just make new friends. It was very easy for me to create a rapport with people. So I took that route. And ironically, I also, because I don't like math, and I ended up in a PhD program where you have to learn statistical analysis, and math is in there. So,
yeah.
But now I'm a lot older, and I'm like, okay, I have to learn this. It's part of the
program. Get through it.
Yeah. So that's big reason why I chose social work, and I love it. It's very, I feel like social work chose me also. It was just like a relationship.
I love that, because not many people, you know exactly what they want to do, but it sounded like you were just, that's just your calling from the get-go, and that's amazing. But what made you like pursue a master's degree after the bachelor's? You know, was once you were had your bachelor's, you were just like, I'm not done, I'm gonna keep going for master's and then PhD. Like, that's you know, most people just bachelor's, I'm done, like.
Yeah, a lot.
Especially with the cost, right, that we mentioned.
Yeah.
Earlier. The fact that you don't get funding and you still chose to go after it.
Right. Yeah. The funding, that's what I always worried about. But my parents said you can they've always been supporting, as long as it's something educational, something that benefits us, they've been supportive. So one big reason why I chose to go back for my master's was because at the bachelor's level, it was more like case management, finding resources, and at the master's, it was more therapy. I wanted to do more therapy with the bachelor's. I worked as a case manager with undocumented minors who crossed into the country. So I saw that we worked with clinicians. And so that's what made me want to go back.
And then you said, I'm going to go and get my PhD now.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, you're something else. Like, you got to have a next level of like motivation for that. Like, what, that's why I know, like, what drives you? Like, what, what made you just keep going? Like, I think that's the biggest fear, is not like sticking with something, especially like education and DACA recipients where policies are changing, especially in this type of environment, like day to day, and you don't know, or like, we don't know what our status is going to be, but you're like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm focused on getting my PhD.
Yeah. So I thought about that too. And it's funny because, well, not funny, right? But when the elections were taking place, for the last president, I was barely graduating with my master's, and I was just going, accepting all of that, and that there might be change, and I might not be able to use my degree and my license, yeah, if it was removed. And then this time when I was like starting, or midway through my PhD, it was the challenge again that it got all the way to the Supreme Court, that it might end. But I've always had the mentality where, hey, I'm going to get as far as I can in life here, in my education. Yeah. If I finish, good. If I wasn't able to finish, at least I knew I got to where I was able to, or until way where they allowed me to get there. Yeah, yeah. I knew, as I was moving through all these steps in my life, I always had that behind the back of my head, thinking that DACA is temporary and it might be taken away at any given time. But my education, they cannot take away.
Yes. Amen. That's what I always try to like preach to people. That's what I'm always saying to people. I'm like, listen, like our stat, like they might be able to take our status in this country, but like they can't extract the knowledge that you've gained all those years. Like, you know, especially in this environment of like technology being so like advanced and remote work. I always tell people, like, you know, if I was to get deported, like I would find a way to still like make money with the knowledge that I have and gained in this country, right? And I think that's where the real value, in my opinion, lies, and something that you are portraying as well.
Yeah, I've always said, I've told my parents, if they do take it away and I'm not able to get citizenship or nothing, I'm going to look into other countries and see where my degree can be beneficial. I've looked into Canada. Hopefully that will never happen, but I know that he's in social, yeah, work, and they go by point systems where the more educated you are, the higher points you get, so they can let you into the country. So I don't want to
like looked into it. You're like, they got a whole point system. Like, I'm like, okay. You got plan B, C, D, and E.
I did. Always, my mom's always said, que no se te cierre el mundo. But I wouldn't want that to happen, because that means I would be away for maybe ever. And I've seen the pain that my parents have had when they're parents have passed during this time that we lived in the U.S. and they couldn't say go and say goodbye and all that. So I wouldn't want that.
No, yeah, likewise. I think it's one of the hardest things that, you know, as DACA recipients, we see our parents like and ourselves getting older, and also like the lives that they left behind and the family that they left behind, and then people like pass away and all that, and it's just like the toll that has on them mentally, and then trickles down to us seeing that and status on top of it. You know, it's just, it's a lot to handle. And it's a big reason why I also wanted to have you on here, is because part of, well, your whole research is based around, that you have to do for your PhD, right? The whole research is based around like the mental health of undocumented, DACA recipients in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, tell us, like, you as a PhD candidate, you have to have like original research, right? So like, yeah, tell us a little bit more about the research and how that works as well as a like PhD candidate, like the reason for doing it.
Yeah, so the PhD, at first it starts with coursework. I did 2.5 years of coursework. where you learn how to do the statistics, the and depending on the study that you're going to do up to your dissertation. So after you finish your coursework, you start working on creating your committee. It has to be one chair and two members. You start thinking about what your study wants, what you want your study to look like, or what population you're interested in. For me, it was the undocumented community and also healthcare disparities in the undocumented communities.
Love that.
When I had presentations, I always spoke about that. So I chose a chair that had knowledge in this population. So then you start researching articles on DACA, which is what I did. A lot of reading, a lot of articles, a lot. I'd never read that much in my life. So I was, man, this is a lot. You give up a lot of weekends, a lot of going out, a lot of
I'm sure.
Different activities with friends. So you eventually find gaps in those articles haven't been researched or you would like to know a little bit more about and explain the reason why you're doing this. So after I did that, so the dissertation's a 5-chapter. I did the first three, the introduction, the statement of the problem. And then my chapter two was the literature review. I reviewed all the literature and what I found. And then chapter three, my methodology, which is what the survey is. The methods that I used, and then I defended. I defended it in September. When you defend your dissertation proposal, you basically tell your committee why you're doing this research, why it matters. I decided to focus on the DACA community because it holds a very important place in my heart, me being a DACA recipient. And as soon as I got accepted into the program, I knew my dissertation was going to be about DACA. Like I had no doubt about it. I said, I want to focus on the DACA community. And after 2 years and a half, my focus hadn't changed, about that, about this population. So I defended what I found in the literature was that DACA recipients have a lot of, support, social support, from families, friends. They're a very close-knit families, support from schools. And I saw a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, a lot of stress. And a lot of this was due to the changes in the policies, the changes in the policymakers leaving, policymakers coming in, the threat of the termination. I saw a lot of that, but what I didn't see a lot of was that the researchers hadn't explored yet social determinants of health. For example, how demographics, like being a woman, being a male, being a female, your income level, where you work, how long you've lived in the U.S., what state you live in, how that affects the anxiety and stress.
Yeah,
and food.
You're listening to the Leo Podcast. I'm Kevin Munoz. Support for today's episode comes from my Patreons. If you enjoy the show and are looking for bonus content and to further support the show, then head on over to patreon.com/latinamericaneo or visit my website, latinamericaneo.org, to join the growing Leo Podcast community. Because the learning doesn't stop with this episode. There's also some sick merch on my website, everything from shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. All info will be at the bottom in the show notes. Now let's get back to today's episode. Right. And that's why I wanted to have you on here because it's just, that's something also just being, like a podcast host and just doing a lot of DACA stuff. And I also do a lot of reading for episodes. Something that I didn't see. So as soon as I saw like this survey that you posted, I was like, oh, this is like amazing research. Like I would love to read like the final product of it whenever like whenever you're done with it, because it's so intriguing to me. The social impacts is often not very little talked about. So seeing like data on how that impacts our everyday lives, it would just be amazing. So maybe we'll have to have you back on here and guide us through that data.
most definitely. I would love to. And the way I did my method was mixed methods, which is qualitative and quantitative. Okay. You remember the survey where at the beginning it was just survey questions, and then at mm-hmm. the end it was questions where you can type in or you can words. So the findings of those two, the quantitative and the qualitative, I'm going to bring them together at the end and see how they differ or how they're the same and how they are compared to other studies also. So I'm really excited about that part.
Yeah, I know. Likewise. Have you had a lot of people that have done the survey so far? And are you still, is it still out there for people to like take?
It is out there. I am going to wrap it up like the first week of December because I need to do the analysis.
Right.
So I used an equation to where, according to my variables that I'm using, I need 162 participants. Mm-hmm. As of today, I have 61. Mm-hmm. So I'm still posting it, letting people know to share it. So I need 100 more participants. So hopefully I get there. If I don't, I might have to discuss that as a limitation in the research at the end, in the discussion.
Like a footnote, like...
the findings, were not the 160 according to the number of DACA recipients that live in the U.S. and all that limitation stuff.
Hopefully, when people hear this episode and when they listen to it and see it on social media, you'll get some more people sign up for it because it's important work.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. It's very meaningful to me. So hopefully I get to that by December. I have all of this month. I'm like, what month are we?
We just hit November. So
I defended in September, October. I took off the whole month. I said, I don't want to see this. I'm working on it this week. I started yesterday again, revising it and reviewing if there's any more articles to put in there. This, so then it could be ready for my analysis in December. But I did take a month off. I said, I'm going to need a new pair of glasses.
Yeah, no, honestly. Oh my gosh. Have you peeked at the data yet? Have you seen like some responses and
I have, but I've just looked at like the age of the participants because I start getting a little anxious about like the results and how it's, is it, are the results going to be what I thought would be or what I thought they wouldn't be?
Why don't you let us know, like, what are some questions that you ask on there? I think that'd be awesome to like know, to hear about as well.
So for the demographics, it would be like age, gender, marital status, mm-hmm. education, employment, the industry. What industry you're working? Was it in healthcare? Was it in the restaurant system? Was it in educational system? The household size, because I did find in the studies that the bigger the household members, the more anxiety undocumented people have in the United States.
The bigger the household?
The number of household members.
Yeah. The more anxiety,
yeah,
I believe that.
and then more like in the bigger cities that research found, like New York, and where it's a little bit more cramped. The state of residency, because some states are Republicans, some states are Democrats. Mm-hmm. California is one of the states with the biggest population of DACA recipients, followed by Texas, New York, and Illinois. So. I really wanted to know if there was a difference, like Texas, that's a Republican, and California, that's Democratic, where doctors see more anxiety and stress living in these two different states. Yeah, so that, and food insecurity.
Yeah, that's a good one, especially during the pandemic.
Right.
That's a big stressor.
Yeah, that's a big stressor, and then I put that in. It's from a survey that the census used. So it asked questions like, in the last 12 months, did you eat less so your family members can eat more?
I did see that in the part of the survey. Yeah. Yep.
And then the material hardship would be: did you have difficulty paying your rent? Did you have difficulty paying as a household utility bill? Those questions like hardship with income.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other two were the outcome variables, which was stress and anxiety.
You know, how would you answer it if you had to like take it yourself?
And if have I you. I did.
Cause that would be a good exercise.
Yeah. I did it like by myself, but then I deleted it because I'm the researcher.
Yeah.
But I did take it. Thankfully, I was in the position where I didn't experience food insecurity. I think my education has really helped me get into a good position in life right now where I live comfortably. But I didn't, the fact that this is my life. That doesn't mean everybody else lived the same life as myself, as a DACA recipient. I know there has been, in studies where DACA recipients, expressed that they had to stop going to school because they got their work permit and they have to work to help their families. So I had the opportunity of still going to school, and my parents said, no, you need your two education. Other DACA recipients did not have that opportunity. And now as we're getting older and they didn't have an education, they weren't able to maybe get into a professional job where the income was a little higher.
Right. Yep. And yeah. That's why I stress education as well so much. Just it's so hard for me because like what education is really valuable. You can make it without educational, but without education, but I always believe like your degree is like that golden ticket, right? It'll get you through the door into certain places, which is so important to just keep pursuing higher education. How would you say like your DACA experience affected like your trajectory in life?
Oh man, it's opened golden doors. it honestly has. I know if without DACA right now I would not be in the position where I'm at, having bought my own house 4 years ago. Living
amazing. Congrats, that's awesome. Thank you. Not a small accomplishment.
Yes. I love that I was able to purchase my house. I live comfortably, I'm able to travel. So all of these things would have not been possible without DACA. I know my dad, he does landscaping, he cuts yards, trims palm trees. So I believe I would probably be working with my dad outside. But my dad I don't know if you can have it, I'm gonna say it better, but my dad's always said like, estudia para que no andes como pendejo como yo en el sol. I was like,
yeah. He would always say, you know, that's so funny.
I was like, es un pendejo, pero usted me enseñó mucho cómo valorar el trabajo.
And
where like at work, they tell us to do something or they have us to do something that's very minimal. It's like flipping a page and people come. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, go work for 8 hours outside under the sun. That's work. This is a piece of, is like easy. Like doing an assessment, like sending a fax that you don't want to send. Don't complain about it because you could be outside in the hot or depending on the weather outside. So DACA really changed my life for the better.
Yeah.
And then I've lived for what, like I said, what's almost what 12 years that we have permits. So it's really, I don't know where I would be now, honestly.
Yeah. And no, yeah. Likewise with the whole experience as well, wouldn't have like the job. Like I work remote and it's just like, that's crazy to think about that, you know, like my family's always just so happy to see like that I'm not also like it's like your dad said. But you know, there's even just because we have DACA, you know, it's still, we still have to deal with like those feelings of like the unknown, and the feeling of like isolation. If you haven't like coped with it, right? Like that feeling of isolation that you're alone as a DACA recipient and like no one's out there like with a similar experience. How have you coped with this feeling, if you've come across it yourself?
Really? Well, my little sister's under DACA, and I have a lot of cousins under DACA, so I really haven't, I know that I'm not the only one like going through this. So I really talked to her about it when I felt that kind of like sense of anxiety or stress about it terminating or the changes that may come. I would always like, hey, do you feel like this? Or, oh my God, I'm like so tired. And then we just have found commonalities, common grounds to talk about. And then we move on. I think what's really, really like working out, teaching Zumba, where it's like working out is beneficial for mental health. So I've never let that go. Right. And stray away more of the negative coping, like drinking, drugs, and all that.
Yeah.
So that's really helped me, knowing that I have others to talk to about it. My parents are very supportive.
Yeah. No, that's great advice as well. That's how I, my sister's also under DACA. So like you, we always talk back and forth. We're like, oh damn, like screw this president. Like, yeah. Like, I can't believe they're doing this and that. Like just saying it out loud to someone helps so much. And I think a lot of recently, more like there's more communities for us online. A lot more people that are talking about it that has also just made me comfortable as it being like a DACA recipient. Is the more people that know about DACA, the more people that talk about it, the more people that that are keeping it relevant is also what makes me feel comfortable to openly talk about it. And also just because you know, a lot of people are afraid of status, of their status, rightfully, right? We've been kind of conditioned to be afraid of speaking like our mind. But like, what do you, in your opinion, what do you think needs to be done to increase like mental health services for undocumented and like the immigrant communities? Because I feel that your research that you're doing is kind of, the research that you're doing is important to help provide the data for that, you know, that we need more mental health services because of these factors, right?
Right. Yeah. So what I really noticed was that there wasn't a lot of mental, yes, there was for students that are in college, there's mental health services free, right, at the university level. But those who are not attending college, those who do not know about services out there, do not have the mental health support that they need. So going beyond like what universities provide, local clinics that have mental health services, putting those out there and those nonprofit organizations that we have that provide mental health or education on mental health and how to cope with all these stressors in life for undocumented members of the community would be really beneficial for us DACA recipients, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And putting the word out there as to who we are. I know I have been one of the first DACA recipients that my coworkers have met in different jobs. Mm-hmm. After Obama was leaving and the new president was going to come in, the last previous president, Trump. And that's where people started to know a little bit more about who were DACA recipients, who we are, are standing at, and when they started putting us out there, that's when people started to learn more about us. And right. I said, yes, I'm a DACA recipient, and I did. I'll never forget at one of my new jobs that I introduced myself, and I carry it with me proudly, who I am, and because that's what helps us get out there, and mm-hmm. for them to know that we're valuable members of the society, that we've grown up here and we're contributing, and we just want to be as normal as we can, you know?
Absolutely.
I remember one of the dietitians was, of course, a Trump supporter, and it was a big group. And I said, yeah, I'm a DACA recipient. Someone asked me, you haven't gone to visit your family? I was like, no, we can't go unless we get a permit. Mm-hmm. And then one person, she was like, oh, they haven't shipped you back yet. And then someone said, Martha, that's not very nice. And, I held it in, but I went to the restroom and I cried. And I'm like, man, there's so many things I could have said.
Yeah.
I have to protect. And I have, you know, I stayed because my mom's always said also, I take a lot of knowledge from my mom. She's like, mejor de que hagan dos locos, mejor que nomás haya uno. So I was like, okay.
Beautiful. Your parents are philosophers, man.
I just said, no, I'm still here. And then one of the other social like, that's not very nice. And she's like, well, I didn't mean it like that, but I didn't keep on arguing. You know, it was useless. But I'll never forget that. I got over it, but it's something that I remember. I used it as a something that makes me stronger, that to let them know that we're still here, you know, we're still
right. Yeah. You carry that proudly, like, you know, like, yeah, I am still here. Like, and what are you going to do about it? Like, that in itself is like, is more than just like stooping down to their level, right?
Right. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I'm still here, and I have a master's, and you have a bachelor's. No, just kidding.
but yeah. And you weren't even born here. just saying.
You exposed me.
Oh my gosh.
That was something that, but I always share with everybody at my work, everywhere. I opened, I remember for a student, I opened up about her writing. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, you have really good writing, as I was reviewing her work. But she didn't do the proper questions. She didn't follow the rubric for the assignment. So I had to give a low grade. And then when she reviewed me, because she's the only one I opened up to about English not being my first language and me having to use the writing center, she did comment. She said, it's not my fault that the professor's first language is not English.
Wow. I was like,
I felt hurt because she said that, and that taught me to never open up that much to students. Mm-hmm. But then another thing is that person being part of the minority African-American community and knowing how oppression works and
right.
saying that was just like, wow, I don't know if she is a good fit for the field of social work.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
She's going to be saying that. Wow. How'd you find out that that's what she said? Like, did she just say that openly?
No. So these are surveys that the students take at the end of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And wow. then at the end, use that writing in about anything, and I get the results. It doesn't have this, but I know who I spoke to.
Yeah, you only told
what? 12 students in the class that time.
Oh, I had my God.
The most I had was 19 in one course. So these things that I've experienced have also made me a stronger person, and just know that I can pull through a lot of things, right? Yeah.
So are we going to have to call you Dr. Hernandez soon? Hey. Is that how it's going to be out here?
Yeah, Dr. Hernandez, please. yeah, it's been hard. So, yeah, yeah,
my take dad. Take advantage of that. Use that because you earned it.
My dad's really excited. He's like, ¿Cuántos más meses? ¿Cuántos meses más? And I'm like, 7.
Yeah.
And then he sees me again and then he's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to rent? Like a venue, like a place, un salon. Vamos a hacer fiesta.
Yeah, it's pero quinceañera, like round two. Like.
Yeah, he's like, no agarres música de esa de americanos. De que, pues, es, yo quiero cumbias, yo quiero esto.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, of course, you know, it's a celebration. It's a big accomplishment. And proving those to, in my family, there's like, it's my little sister, like 5 other cousins or 6 that have DACA and myself. And I'm the only one who has a master so far and the only one who's going to have a PhD. And some come to me and they say, I look up to you and I want to.
I was going
to
say, so far, like you're paving the way for them. Like they look up to you and see that you're doing it. And a lot of people are listening right now too. Well, you know, like it's possible. Like you're that example that regardless of our status, like we're still thriving.
Yeah, it is possible regardless of our status and regardless if you have you had difficulties in school, because I was always like my grades were not the best in elementary, in middle school. Mm-hmm. I also had to struggle with the whole identity, learning the your well, like orientation, that I was gay, being bullied. So all of that was always something
that right?
A lot of things, like being gay, being undocumented, being a minority, like, you know, all these things that I had to struggle through to get to where I'm at have really made me value and everything that I've gotten through. It's just crazy. Now that I think about it, I'm like, wow.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not easy and it's crazy, right? Sometimes we don't take the time to like sit down and absorb all that we've accomplished, because we're kind of just like on this, for lack of better words, like survival mode, just trying to go after it. Especially in the US where like life just moves so fast, like it's just fast paced here. You know, when you talked about your parent, to your parents and their home country, and I don't know if you've been back to Mexico on like advanced parole, but when I went back to Guatemala on advanced parole, it's true. You know, you see how like people over there live life, way differently. And obviously like growing up there, like you, if you remember certain things as well. So sometimes it's important to just sit back and like, just be like, yeah, I really did that shit. Like,
yeah. And my dad, I always remember where I come from, and all my accomplishments. I post like on Facebook. My parents. I acknowledge that they were a big part of. And then the other day, I went to my parents, and it was a Friday night. My dad's like, "You're not gonna go." I was like, "No, I have to work at the hospital." and he said, "Ni modo, queríamos el norte, ¿no?" Le dije, no, agradecido. I am thankful for providing us the north and
taking that risk, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They never had the opportunity of knowing what working with a legally working as a professional in the United States.
Yeah.
They are always very intrigued and asking me questions about how is work? What do you do at work? Like, how is it? And they don't, about the whole, like, PTO system and requesting time off.
They're like, you can request time off? Like,
I'm like, no.
They're like, no, that's part of it.
You have time. They pay you even though you don't go to work. I was like, yeah, that's part of being a professional worker and those opportunities. So yeah, I always share it with them, and I am very thankful with my parents.
Yeah,
because
I love that. I'm with you. So
yeah.
Listen, thank you so much for like coming on here. And you know, we really just officially met today, and I'm like super happy for you and like all you've accomplished. So I can only imagine like how proud like your family and like friends are. Like that is amazing. And I love to hear that. And hopefully like motivates others like us to pursue their dreams and not give up on it. Cause you're like a prime example of what can be done if you don't give up on your dreams, you know, regardless of what we have to face. And like just to, you know, close out, cause I don't want to keep you for so long. I just want to see if there's any questions that I didn't ask that you'd like to share as well with people that are listening.
No, I think we pretty much discussed, you know, from beginning to the point where I'm in life right now and all the difficulties that and the accomplishments that I've had in my life as a DACA recipient. Mm-hmm. I thank you for giving me the time of day to sharing my story and my experience here.
Yeah, of course.
And something that I really, when they asked me, why are you getting another higher education, or why are you going up another level, or why do you want more? And I've always lived by the motto that if there's room to grow, let's grow. Let's advance in life. So I hope my story is will inspire others who will listen to this podcast, and I hope to be back when I get my results and discuss them.
Yes, absolutely. We're gonna have to have you back. There's no doubt about that. just like I said, just hearing your story and going through the survey and already kind of seeing like what the data potential for that data can be used for, that's also big, right? Just fires me up just for the future. Yeah. Like, and
yeah,
you know, just what's last two questions here is like, what's the what's next for you after you're done with your research and PhD? What happens next after the partying, of course?
after the party,
of course, first. But first, Bejeo, right?
Yeah, that little caldo. So after that, I think I'm going to, I've thought about it, and I'm going to stay in direct practice like I'm doing now in the field of social work. I feel like 7 years in social work, I can still gain a little bit more knowledge on the field. But still be teaching as an adjunct professor at a local university in the social work program.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Love that.
And doing it in the undocumented community.
Awesome. Love to hear that. And lastly, what is your definition of success?
My definition of success? Yeah. Accomplishing with the goals that you have set for yourself and enjoying the journey to those goals.
Mm. I love that. And that sounds about what you've been doing. So I think you're pretty successful by your own definition there. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a family or a friend and rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps tremendously in order to bring more awareness and educational resources to our community. For more information and to stay up to date with what I'm doing, you can follow me on Instagram at LatinAmericaNeo. And if you need more information and resources, you can visit my website, latinamericaneo.org. I'm Kevin Munoz. This has been the Leo Podcast, and I'll see you next time.